Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
You are now listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
We're the folks who give you Lost and Rewound every Thursday from 3 to 4 p.m. listing it off. My name is Alon.
And I'm Jimmy.
And I'm Allison.
And we've got high energy for you today, yes. So we don't want to make you feel like, go, go, go.
No, I'm going to keep it low energy, baby.
I'm a little tired. I'm tired today, though. What's going on? Maybe it's the weather.
It's sort of nice out today.
These cold days, you're bundled up, and you have a chance to be on the computer a lot. Go over and visit our pledge page at radiofreebrooklyn.org/pledge, where yes. You can contribute to the whole station. We are in 501c3 non-for-profit, so all of what you contribute to making Radio Free Brooklyn better will be for, will be tax deductible. So it's all for good causes.
Or radiofreebrooklyn.org/LAR, where you can personally donate to us.
Lost and Rewound at radiofreebrooklyn.org is our email address if you want to contribute any of your old audio from your yesteryears, of which makes Lost and Rewound the absolute zany time capsule that it is.
Yeah, be a guest on our show. Call in from across the cosmos. You could do it. I want more guests in different time zones. And I want to do math. It has to do with time. And then I'll feel like I'm getting closer to being a time villain.
No time for delay. Let's get on to the show now. Like Lost and Rewound ties into the Danziger Zone in terms of how I got from there to here, we're going to tell a little story about the musical theater involvement this week. And we have some non-Danziger Zone clips. We have some Woodstock Youth Theater clips. Not to spoil any surprises, but we got something really exciting lined up.
Our slabs?
Yep. It's going to be great. But before we begin, I wanted to just do a quick plug and say that I am in fact directing my very first show coming up in March. And I'm producing and directing something, which, you know, why I mentioned the whole how I got from there to here thing, because I spent years as an actor and now here I am actually on the eve of directing actors for the first time, which has never happened before. For the first half, I want to cover the ground of some of these musical theater involvements I had as a youngster with our special guest that I conducted an interview with earlier in the week.
I have on the phone Daniela Sumerano. She is an old friend of mine through the Woodstock Youth Theater growing up in Woodstock, New York. She is an actor. She is a teacher. Everything that I am, but even more so, just a smarter version of me and a prettier version of me and also a dog person. So welcome to this sort of unorthodox version of an interview for Lost and Rewound, Daniela Sumerano.
Well, thank you, Elon. I am so sorry that I couldn't be there today, that I can't call in during the show, but you know this vagabond lifestyle we've got going. You know, it is funny the way our lives have kind of paralleled each other in terms of theater and performance and real estate and our fur babies.
Yes, well. Absolutely.
I'm excited to talk to you.
We have gone different paths with our acting, and I guess the real question for you is, how did you get involved in acting at first?
The story that my mother tells is, I think, early on in elementary school, kindergarten or first grade, a circus came to Edson Elementary in the Kingston School District where I grew up. And, you know, I saw them and I was like, I want to do that. I want to be performing. So that is my mother's version that, I insisted on performing. I believe this version, but I also think that I was a little nuts as a kid. I had a lot of energy, and when you break it down, the cost of, enrolling in Woodstock Youth Theater or Missoula Children's Theater was probably a little bit cheaper than the local babysitter who, I probably would have just driven crazy with all of my extra energy and need for attention.
Which you did.
There's a balance.
I'm sure you probably did anyway, right? I mean, we all drove our babysitters crazy.
Oh, yeah. I had so many scams going for, like, when they would get a baby. Like, they would talk, like, their best friend's kid into babysitting me and Leah on a Friday night. And we would just, like, scam her on everything, like what we could watch, where we could go. And we were like, you know, in elementary school, just little liars. Little actors. let me take that back.
Well, your sister, so you mentioned Leah. You have two sisters,
yeah.
And Leah, the middle sister, effectively, she's an actor as well. She got more into the musical theater realm as an adult, but even so, when you were younger, was that bug manifested onto her, or was she sort of into it basically around the same time?
Well, so Leah was really a musician, and she is a traditionally trained singer, and that's how she got involved in theater. Like me, and with our family, I think, you know, theater also served as a great babysitter at the time. That kind of kept our minds going and kept us occupied. And we were not necessarily athletes, so it was a great way to learn cooperation. But Leah really loves to sing, and she's an amazing singer. And that's really what keeps her involved in performing.
What did your parents even think? I mean, has there ever been anybody else in the family before the gals of the Zumorano clan in Kingston, New York, to get involved in theater? Well, your parents must have been just like, what are we doing? How do we do this?
You can't even imagine. My mother is an artist. She's the type of artist who locks herself in her studio, recoils at the presence of other people, has no interest in acting, in, like, interacting with the outside world, right? And then she gets three little girls, because I also have my youngest sister, Alyssa, is also, right now, she's a professional stage hand and carpenter.
Yeah.
And so my mother, who's like this naturally like recluse painter, jeweler, artist, ended up with three little like showboat hands just running around singing and acting. I remember since second grade, I've been acting out Les Miserables as like one of the prostitutes. My mother was just like, it makes sense. All she wanted was an artist. She wanted an artist, and she got three performers.
Okay.
It's really not fair.
So fast forward to 93, maybe, 92?
93, it was right here.
Was Charlie Brown your first Woodstock Youth Theater production?
No. Oklahoma and Bye Bye Birdie were my first. When Beth was working at a UPAC in Kingston, those were my first Woodstock Youth Theater production. I did Bye Bye Birdie when Brody and Ken and the other Jeffy and Memory.
Really? That I don't think I realized.
Yes.
So you do Bye Bye Birdie as the, you know, when you play Rosie Alvarez, and that was your second time.
My second time.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah.
I got to reel back for 1 second here, because okay. Now we have another thing in common, which is that, and I don't think we actually covered this ever, but here we are covering it now on the phone. You and I have both done Bye Bye Birdie twice, and the second time I did Bye Bye Birdie was at Poughkeepsie Day School when I was in 8th grade. There was a production that they did, and I got a chance to play Conrad Birdie. So, yeah, right?
Conrad?
Yeah.
And Conrad in Bye Bye Birdie?
Within the span of 2 years, right? And for whatever reason, they decided to pick the pipsqueak, big-nosed brace face as Conrad Birdie. So go figure. They were clearly desperate for somebody with some talent.
I can picture it. Stage presence.
Okay, so Bye Bye Birdie with the teens, effectively, was one of your first. And you played UPAC. This is sort of more significant for the locals, but UPAC is not a small theater. UPAC is a very established theater in Kingston, New York, as a sort of a go-to for many out-of-town, big-name talent.
Yeah, absolutely. I just got my mom tickets to Louis Black in February, and Melissa Etheridge was here, you know, last month. So when we were growing up, Fiona Apple came to UPAC, and it's connected to the Bardavon now. So it is our local kind of professional theater. Mm-hmm.
So your engagement with being just a part of the ensemble inspired you to tackle on more of these smaller ensemble roles, like, say, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Yes, I think that was kind of my transition or my family's transition from working with Beth at USAC in Kingston to traveling to Woodstock and being a part of her Woodstock Youth Theater there.
The Yorkin Man Charlie Brown production that we did, nobody wore any of the symbolic outfits that we know the Peanuts characters to wear. But that was not true. There were some who did. But then at some point, it just sort of, I don't know if this was maybe a choice that they just sort of decided to only have Ike, who played Charlie Brown, wear the, you know, the symbolic yellow and black striped shirt, and Lucy had the bow in her hair. Well, wait a second. Lucy didn't have a bow in her hair. And then next thing you know, I'm looking like Alfalfa. Peppermint Patty, who you played, is like pigtails in a pink dress. And it's just everything. Just like kind of... Like, Snoopy was probably the only other character played by Jacob Troy other than Ike as Charlie Brown that had any sort of relevant nature to the comic strip.
I don't know if my memory is correct, but Valen Swenson, yes. Am I saying that last name correct, played Lucy, and her mother was in charge of our costumes. And
okay.
I believe I remember working with her, too, for Bye Bye Birdie in terms of costumes. And I've always been a curvy girl, and I think they basically just put me in whatever they could find that would fit me from the Salvation Army.
That's awesome. So
I wore pink in Charlie Brown and a lot of mustard, I think, in Bye Bye Birdie.
Now it's coming to me. Valen's mom was instrumental in so many of these productions, so I give her credit for making it work. I still don't know to this day why I look like Alfalfa, but I took it. Like, I was like, all right, Schroeder's going to be Alfalfa for this production. I got the buck teeth. Let's make it happen, kid. But right now, I want to...
No,
you're about to say.
Did they give you a cowlick? Like, I do kind of vaguely remember...
They absolutely gave me a cowlick. I mean, it wasn't nearly as prominent, but then again, I was only, like, 10, so it was
right.
The cowlick hadn't reached puberty yet. It was still... Yes, exactly.
Right.
I want this time, actually, to play a clip of the two of us. I prepared this clip from another production that we did that pretty much anybody who is listening to this will know very well. But I'm going to play it, and we'll talk about it after.
Oh, follow the yellow brick road. Now which way do I go?
Pardon me, but that's a very nice way to go.
Who said that? Oh, don't be silly, Toto. Scarecrows can't talk.
Of course, it's pleasant down that way, too.
That's funny. Wasn't he pointing the other way before?
Of course, people do go both ways.
Why, you did say something, didn't you? Are you doing that to confuse me, or can't you make up your mind?
That's the problem. I can't make up my mind. I haven't got a brain. Only straw.
No brain? How can you talk?
I don't know, but some people with no brains could do an awful lot of talking, don't they?
Yes, I suppose so. Can't you get down? Let's see. Maybe I could help
you. Of course, I'm not bright about things, but maybe if you just bent the nail a little bit, I would just slip up and... Oh, there goes some of me again.
Oh, did you hurt yourself?
No, I just stick it back in again. Did I scare you?
No, I just thought you hurt yourself.
But I didn't scare you. I didn't think so. The crows come from miles away to eat my corn and laugh in my face. Oh, I'm a failure because I haven't got a brain.
Well, what would you do if you had a brain?
What would I do? Why, I would wad away the hours, confer with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain. I'd unravel every riddle for any individual in trouble or in pain.
Whoa! With the thoughts you'd be thinking, you could be another Wicked if you only had a brain.
Oh, I can tell you why. The ocean's near the shore. I could think of things I never thought before. And then I'd sit and think some more. I would not be just a nothing. My head all full of stuffing, my heart all full of pain. A I would dance and be merry. Life would be a ding of dairy if I only had a brain. Whoa! Wonderful.
Back in Kansas, the trolls would be scared to pieces.
They would? Where's Kansas?
Well, Kansas is where I live, and I want to get back there so bad. I'm going all the way to the Emerald City to see if the Wizard of Oz can help me.
Wizard? Do you think if I went with you, there's this wizard? He could help me and get some brains?
Well, I couldn't say, but even if he didn't, you'd be no worse off than you already are.
That's true.
But maybe you shouldn't. I have this witch mad at me and you could get in trouble.
Witches? I'm not afraid of witches. Well, I'm not afraid of anything. Except the light and match.
Well, I can certainly see why.
But I'd face a whole box of them just for the chance of getting some brains. Look, I won't be any trouble. I don't need a thing. I won't try to manage things because I haven't got a brain. Oh, please, won't you take me with you?
Oh, of course I will.
Hooray! We're off to see the wizard!
Well. Oh, dear me, you're not starting off very well,
oh,
are you?
Oh, I'll try. I really will.
To Oz?
To Oz! We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. We hear he is a wizard, ever a wizard was. The Wizard of Oz is one because of the wonderful things he does. We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
So that was our first time singing together on a stage, and that was also UPAC, I think, right?
That may have been Ashura. That was Ashura High School.
Yes. No, you're absolutely correct.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was a big theater, too.
Very big theater. The local high school that you didn't go to, and I avoided going to. So, Natch,
right.
Thoughts that go into your head from that production. I mean, that was an amazing opportunity. Bang, boom, done. Dorothy.
Well, sure. You know, a celebrity power couple is essentially born, right?
Right.
you and I would go on to partner in another musical. I mean, you got to give the audience what they want.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
But I love how when we sing "Off to See the Wizard," like one sentence is into it, I'm like out of breath. I'm just like, I'm trying so hard, and I think we're skipping, and I can just hear myself like, I'm off to see the wizard. So you know, that's some vocal technique to work on that, you know, I guess I've never really learned, but I loved it. I loved hearing you.
Aw, thank you.
Again.
Girl, thank you. I honestly, like, one of the things that brings me back is just how I think that was probably one of the biggest productions that I had done at that point as a, mm-hmm. like, a principal character. So there were just so many young kids, and we were all were getting dressed in one of the classrooms, and it was just, like, it was a lot. I was not comfortable at all, like, getting dressed in front of other kids at that time, older, younger, what have you. So I was just like, oh my god, this is a lot. Everything smells like glitter, and everybody's, like, half naked. What the fuck? I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
Find me a private bathroom, and I'll just get this scarecrow shit on right, and I don't have to worry about it.
Oh, that's so funny.
But that's 11 for you in a nutshell, right?
Yes, but can I tell you, a memory just popped back, so I had like a little bit of a different experience from you. I don't think from the classroom changing perspective, but there was a boy who went to my church who also went to Aunt Jura, and I had such a crush on him, and I felt so special in my Dorothy outfit that I used to purposely go to the bathroom in the Aunt Jura school section. I would come out of like our changing area and go to the bathroom and like try and be spotted by, like, as many of the high school students as possible, because I thought I was, like, so cool. I'm the star of the show. Strike up a conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that girl's a star.
That's
and
wonderful.
And then, like, hoping hoping that my crush would just like inadvertently, oh, me? Oh, yeah, I'm doing a little theater show. Oh, yeah, I guess you can tell I'm Dorothy, you know, just very casually and nonchalantly.
Yeah.
You know, good to see you. Good to run into you.
That's
great. Like, what a little psychopath, but hey.
I have one more clip I want to play for you. There is another clip that we're going to be playing on this episode from this production, but for the sake of just keeping with the theme of our, as you sort of teased just after the clip previously played, our panache for duets and working together. Let's just play it, and then we'll talk about this, because I have so many thoughts, and you know what I'm getting to, so let's not delay.
Yeah, can't wait.
Well, Albert, here I am, 6:30 on the button. Where's the train?
It left at 6:25.
But, Albert, you told me to be here
with Conrad.
At 6:30, I know.
With Mama.
Albert, you wanted us to miss that train.
It stands to reason, Rose. Why take a train to New York while we have 2 tickets to Pumpkin Falls, Iowa?
What's in Pumpkin Falls, Iowa?
An opening in the teaching staff. I read today's paper. They need someone to teach domestic science and English. And, you know, they better get your documents ready because, well, they prefer the applicant was married.
Oh, Albert.
Rosie. Did anyone ever tell you that's the most sweetest name in the world? I was never crazy for flowers. I confess that nothing left me colder. I could watch a daisy for hours. And all it did was leave me several hours older. Lilacs or lilies, any bloom you please. All that it did was make me shrug or sneeze. But now I love each blossom that I see. For a lovely little rose loves me. And now my life is rosy. Since I found my Rosie. With a girl like Rosie, how could I be blue? Hand in hand we'll mosey, me and little Rosie. We will be so cozy by a fire built for two. Oh, I once heard of home that goes. A rose is a rose. Well, I don't agree, take it from me. There's one rose sweeter than any that grows, and that's my Rosie. I'm so glad she chose me. Life is one sweet, beautiful song to me. And now my life is rosy, since I found my Rosie.
To the winter will go,
with a girl like Rosie. How could I be blue?
Oh, we'll have us a home out west, a nice little split level nest, and in every room, roses in bloom.
But there's one rose sweeter than all of the rest, and that's my rose.
I'm so glad you chose me. Life is one beautiful song. When love is right, then what could be wrong? When life is one sweet, beautiful song to me.
The feels! So many feels!
It's so sweet! I could not, I wanted to sing along. So
you were, while we were listening to it. You were singing along a little bit. Okay. Let's throw it all on the table here. We've talked about this one-on-one with each other, but that was when I developed, the most massive crush on you. And also, this particular performance, you managed to plow through with really, in my opinion, really flying colors in spite of not having your voice fully there. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, that's right. I do remember that. I think I was the first one that got sick. And then Lindsay, who played Kim, got sick, and I felt so guilty because her dad came back to our classroom dressing rooms, and we were both, like, hacking up lungs, and he was talking to her about just, like, you know, getting out. But anyways, like, I've never been confident in my singing, so I don't really know that it changed the quality of my singing. I remember Beth, like, standing in the audience, like, screaming at me because I would either, like, drop an octave or, like, sing a note that was, like, harmonic. I don't know if that's the right word, but, like, I would always try and avoid the higher notes, whatever part I was playing, and she'd be like, just hit the note! Like, I was so shy singing, you know? But it's funny, the memories that you have. I do remember that I lost my voice, and then, you know, I gave it to our other female lead.
It was a really fun production, seeing, like, how everybody was cast. Like, it wasn't necessarily typecast at all. Everybody was sort of, like, very mismatched, and it just felt really, really wonderful to be able to work with everybody anyway.
Well, speaking about mismatched, one of my strongest memories of that show is, so I'm a sixth grade girl, I think you're a sixth grade boy, so I am considerably larger than you. I'm a little wide, I'm a little curvy, and I think I might even be taller than you. So when we're, like, choreographing that last number, when, like, normally, like, the guy would pick up the girl, we get choreographed that I pick you up on my back.
Yep.
Like,
totally. That happened.
Am I remembering that?
Yo, that happened. That was videotaped.
That was hard. That was hard for, like, a, you know, kind of going into puberty girl.
Yeah.
It was very clear.
Well, I mean, look. Everybody was taller than me. That's pretty much what I'm getting at. So, like, I'm playing the main character, and Mae Peterson, the mother character, played by Shannon Wolf, she is taller than most guys were at that age. But even so, like, my mother was hovering over both of us, and it was just really funny because, not to like, make anything about, you know, like, body image and everything. I think it was rather amusing, the fact that, like, she killed it. She was amazing. I mean, was an incredible Mama Peterson. But watching the videotape and just looking at this tiny little pipsqueak, I can't help but be like, man, somehow Beth believed in this kid, regardless of the fact that he was tinier than even his female counterparts, to rock this part.
Absolutely. And it totally fit the character. It was just, when you talk about, you know, being an awkward kid, and this show definitely kind of, again, we were, you know, in these dressing rooms at Auntie or getting our hair done and our makeup done. On top of that, this show, unlike The Wizard of Oz, did have romantic relations in it. There were at least three romantic relationships written into the show. So, you know, I had my first stage kiss, but my first kiss ever was with you at the end of that song that you just played.
And for that, but here's the funny thing, for that particular, maybe it was for all of the, I think it was six shows we did, I want to say that maybe for just that one that was videotaped, because I can't recall offhand, we didn't kiss outright because I didn't want to catch what you had. So we did like a side kiss. We did like a side kiss, which was like super, super kitty innocent. And I took it. Like, I was like, yeah, all right, we can do this. But, like, yeah, that just sat with me for years. And I was like, yeah, that is how Alain Danziger would totally rock a love interest, you know, pinnacle peak moment at the very, very end.
Going for the cheek.
Yeah, exactly. Going for the cheek. This has been so much fun. I'm really glad that we got a chance to chat about this. I gotta say, I was watching these videos and preparing them for today's episode, and, you know, I know that it doesn't really give justice. The audio can only do so much when the visuals are so bright and vibrant and tell such a huge story, but the least I could do is bring a little bit of it to life in the audio form, and having you to be hearing some of it back with me totally warms my heart.
Oh my God, well, I feel like this made my year. Just the memories, and I'm laughing so hard. It's so sweet. We can't talk about it too often, because it'll, like, ruin it, but it's precious. All of it. So precious.
Danielle Sumerano here on Lost and Rewound for a very special remote from my office at house interview. And we'll be back with more on Lost and Rewound right after this. This is Radio Free Brooklyn.
So cute. She has a good voice. I like her voice. Like, in general, just like her speaking voice is really nice.
She's great.
She's impressed with her personality.
Yeah. She's like super jolly.
She seems pleasant.
No, she's a keeper. She's one of the best, strongest, most consistent friends I've had in my life. And lo and behold, it's because of the theater that we are connected. So I have the Woodstock Youth Theater to thank for that.
Well, I was just wondering about stage kisses, right?
Yes.
It was the fact that she said that her first kiss,
yes,
was a stage kiss with you.
Yes.
Have you ever had a stage kiss, Allison, like when you were a kid in high school?
Oh, when I was a kid. No, I don't think so.
I had one as well. And when I had a stage kiss.
When you were Demetrius, right?
I was Demetrius. I think I might have had, two in that play. And it was with two different women. Because it's Midsummer Night's Dream. Which is, you know, everybody's trying to hook up with everybody. That's the whole idea.
Yes.
And one of the girls had a crush on me.
Cool.
But she was some sort of marry me religion. That, you know, she was like, she had broached that to me. She's like, hey, why don't you ask me to marry? I was like, I don't know about this. Or some scenario to that effect.
Marry me religion. Like what, in what sense?
And she was a virgin. She probably had a virgin ring or something.
Something. I don't know. I don't like to get, you know, I'm not a soapboxy kind of person. This wasn't for me.
Let's move on to another clip that I've prepared for this episode. This is me and Charlie Brown when I was aforementioned Alfalfa / Schroeder. I got a chance to do some three-part harmonies with an aforementioned Valen Swenson, now Valen Coscarella, a.k.a. DJ Ladyverse, in Woodstock, New York, and a guy by the name of Ike Shaw, who never went to my high school, but he works now as like a director of admissions at my old high school.
Okay.
So Charlie Brown, Lucy Schroeder, and I guess a little bit of Linus here.
A book report on Peter Rabbit.
A book report on Peter Rabbit.
A book report on Peter
Rabbit is a stupid book about this stupid rabbit who sells vegetables from other people's gardens. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17.
The name of the book about which this book report is about is Peter Rabbit, which is about this rabbit. I found it very, I like the part where it was a, it reminded me of Robin Hood.
And the part where Little John jumped from the rock to the sheriff of Nottingham's back. And then Robin and everyone swung from the trees in a sudden surprise attack. And they captured the sheriff and all of his goods, and they carried him back to their camp in the woods. And the sheriff was kissing the dinner and all but a ringing away. And he sailed the car. His men rushed in, the owls flew. Peter Rabbit, the son of that kind of thing, too.
The other people's name was McGregor. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. In examining such a work as Peter Rabbit, it is important that the superficial characteristics of its deceptively simple plot should not be allowed to blind the reader to the more substantial fabric of its deeper motivations. In this report, I plan to discuss the sociological implications of family pressures so great as to drive an otherwise moral rabbit to commit acts of thievery which he consciously knew were against the law. I also hope to explore the personality of Mr. McGregor and his conflicting roles as farmer and humanitarian.
Start writing now. when I'm not really arrested, it could upset my thinking, which is not good at all. I'll get a fresh start tomorrow, and it's not due till Wednesday, so I'll have all of Tuesday unless something should happen. Why does this always happen? I should be outside playing, getting fresh air and sunshine. I work best under pressure, and there'll be lots of pressure if I wait till tomorrow. I should start writing now, but if I start writing now when I'm not really rested, it could upset my thinking, which is not good at all.
The name of the rabbit was Peter. 4, 2, 5, 2, 6, 2, 7, 28, 29, 30. Ha! Down came the staff on his head, smash! And Ron fell like a sack full of lead, crash! The sheriff laughed and he left him for dead, ah! But he was wrong. 5, 2, 6, 2, 7, 28, 9, 40. Just then, it was a sign for the fight to begin, zing! And it looked like the sheriff would win, ah! But not for long. Away they ran. Just like rabbits, who run a lot, as you can tell from the story of Peter Rabbit, which we report is about.
How do they expect us to write a book report of inequality in just 2 days? How can they conspire so miserable and so effectively in so many ways?
Not to mention the extreme pressure exerted on him by his deeply rooted rivalry with Flopsy, Mopsy, and Cottontail.
If I start writing now, I'm not really rested, it's a good upset my thinking, which is not good at all.
The very, very, very end. Amen.
A book report on Peter Rabbit.
Most fun book report I ever did.
I mean, you sang so fast.
Yeah, dude.
Also, that whole sociological, there's that two or three minute line.
Matt Rosenberg was the one who was playing Linus, who was doing the talking parts. And so I was playing Schroeder, the one who was connecting Peter Rabbit with Robin Hood.
Yes.
Like my breath, like I couldn't even do all the lines in one breath because it was just so many words I was trying to sing. Which is crazy because now I have the breath control, but clearly I did not then as like a 55 pound weakling.
Listen to this. I'm glad because in the future, when I do hope to have children, I feel like if they tell me they come home and they're like, "Dad, I'm going to be in the musical," I'm going to be like, "Can I talk to the director? Maybe we can make this a drama or a comedy." Sans song.
If done well, musical theater is fucking badass. It's like the best, but a lot of times it's done not well.
I'm spoiled from New York.
Yeah.
I've seen Broadway.
Here's a good one to listen to. Since Jimmy's such a fan of musical theater, we're gonna take it to the absolute extreme. I would say that both of my Bye Bye Birdie experiences were more or less positive, even in spite of the fact that the show, in retrospect, is not a great show. It's got really cringeworthy lines. There's like a line where I think Albert's like, "I am man. You will listen to me." Really?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
There are a lot of if you watch old movies, old plays, the amount of misogynistic lines and things that just kind of slip out are crazy.
It's crazy.
This play is so misogynistic. It's terrible. Even this clip begins with more indication of language that would never fly now, but it's got a classic in it. It's got a banger. Musical theater banger. You could put those three words together.
I mean, like, again, there's for some reason, there's one musical that I like. and it's How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Oh,
and yeah. There's a whole song in that about how you shouldn't molest your secretary.
All right. Yeah, that's true. secretary is not a toy. Not a toy.
It's true.
No, my boy.
All right, let's take a listen to this one.
What's the matter with them?
Oh, they're just sad because they think that Conrad Bernie, when he gets back in the army, they'll be too old for him.
Well, hi, I'm Albert Peterson, Conrad Bernie's manager.
Ah, come on. Things can't be that black. Smile. Little girl, this is an adult speaking. I order you to smile. Please. Gray skies are gonna clear up. Put on a happy face. Brush off the clouds and cheer up. Put on a happy face. Take off the gloomy mask of tragedy. It's not your style. You look so good that you'll be glad you decided to smile. Pick out a pleasant outlook. Stick out that noble chin. Wipe out that foam of doubt look. Slap on a happy grin. And spread sunshine all over the place. Just put on a happy face. Put on a happy face. Of banana splits and licorice, and you'll feel fine. I knew a girl so gloomy, she'd never laugh or sing. She wouldn't listen to me, now she's a mean old thing. And spread sunshine all over the place, just put on a happy face.
Playing the piano was just butchering it. Just butchering it.
But, yeah.
I've been on the show long enough now that I know I can listen to a group of kids on a cold tape and know your voice. I know your vocal timbre as a kid.
It's true.
And what it is that you sound like really Jewish for a kid. Yeah. if I hear someone singing, I'm like, oh, that's the most Jewish sounding one. Like, it's definitely a lot.
Yeah. If there's only one way to make a misogynistic number, ooh, right?
Smile.
Yeah, exactly.
Smile the song.
Yeah.
But see, I've also seen like white construction worker tell the Mexican man behind the counter making a salad to smile, Miguel.
Well, at McDonald's, you're allowed to request it. It's on the menu.
No.
Yeah, it is.
No.
Yeah.
In what way? I don't go to McDonald's.
Is that like asking Cold Stone Creamery folks to wish you happy birthday?
If you look on the menu, at they might have taken it away, but when I was a kid, all the time I would look for it, and I would do it every so often, like after I got my food, so I knew it wouldn't spit in it, because I'm probably mad about it. You look on the thing, and it would say smile on the menu, and you look at the price, and it says free. You can order it, and you go, can I have a smile, please? And they'll literally, gross, like, this awful, like, curse, this blood-curdling smile, oh, will creep across their face.
No, to anyone listening.
Like, they're so angry, but they
if
have
you
to
ever
do
tell
it
me to smile, I will fucking kick you in the fucking face.
I was thinking that, too. Like, when you said, like, a man will ask another man to smile, I was just thinking, if a man...
No, but it's true.
If a man asked me to smile,
I've seen
like,
it
hey,
happen.
Bro, when you smile, like I would put him through a window. I would bust out all the moves.
But so we say it's misogynistic.
We think I'm a luchador.
But in that case, it would have been racist, right? Because it's a white man to a Hispanic man.
Sure. I think it's maybe just like, you know, don't tell people
how
what
to feel.
Exactly.
Maybe it's not your business.
Little girl, I order you to smile. Please.
Well, I think it's like telling someone to do anything. This is America. You tell her, did you just tell me to do something? Because I tell you, I'm the only one tells me to tell, you know, yeah. So that's the situation.
I mean, there's so many things wrong with the way that this show is written. There's even a song called One Boy, One Special Boy. That's the way it should be. No, not necessarily. There's plenty of folks out there who are non-monogamous polyamorous
one
who
boy,
are like,
one special
yeah,
boy.
Like, I'm allowed how many ever partners I want, God damn it.
What if my special boy dies? Then what do I do, Ron?
Exactly.
And we're not special. I think this is something that was.
What if my special boy has three special women on the side, Alon?
Whoa! Well, I know that you folks are like a lot older than me, so.
My favorite part of that show is when, because for whatever reason, the director decided to keep all these very adult theme sections of the original production in this this middle school production. So there's like a scene where Daniela's character goes out, not on the town, and goes out to a bar and orders like some scotches and then dances for a whole like group of Shriners who aren't even wearing Shriner hats, first of all, in this production.
Oh, a little free liquor. And that deserves a dance.
Exactly. And so she dances and like all the guys start like chasing after her and it's like, whoa, that's a very adult theme.
I saw a meme and it was like just the difference in what's socially acceptable. Five women chasing after a guy and he's like heartthrob. And then had five guys chasing after a woman and it was like rape.
That's a double standard, right?
It is a double standard.
For our final clip of the show, we have gotten to the main event. This is our Source of the Recreation Theater. Here's how this would work. We're going to play the clip first, and then we are going to instantaneously reenact the clip that you will be hearing. What we are about to hear is sixth grade. I'm playing Max Detweiler in a production of Sound of Music. Also featured here was aforementioned Charlie Brown from a previous clip before, Ike Shaw, and then a lady by the name of Lila Carey, now Lila Mortimer. Right. Actually, former guest Joey Carey's older sister was in this.
Hey, Detweiler, while you were out, there was a long-distance call from Berlin for you.
Who will be calling me from Berlin?
They said you'd know who it was.
Thank you, Franz. Gail, what were you just talking about?
Max, this isn't the first call you've gotten from Berlin.
Gail, you know I can't help it if I have no political convictions. Can I help it if others have?
Let's not stir that up again. The Germans have promised not to invade Austria. Max knows that.
Then why does he keep on answering those calls from Berlin?
Because if people don't keep their promises, I may have to make some friends among them.
Naturally.
Oh, you agree too?
Gail, this is the way I see it. There was a man who was dying. They were giving him the last rites. They asked him, "Do you renounce the devil and all his works?" And he said, "At this time, I prefer not to make any enemies."
Georg, if they were to invade, would you defy them?
Yes.
Do you realize what happened to you? To your property?
To your children?
To everyone close to you? Elsa! To me!
What will you do if they invade us?
But if they sense with it, just sit down, wait for it to all blow over.
And you think it will?
One thing is for sure. Nothing you will do will make any difference.
Relax, darling. Don't look so serious. Take the world off your shoulders.
You dear, attractive, dewy-eyed idealist. Today you have to learn to be a realist.
You may be bent on doing deeds of daring do. But up against a shark, what can a herring do?
You're on their side, you're not in the middle.
I will not bow my head to the men I despise.
You won't have to bow your head, you stupid little.
Why not learn to put your faith and your reliance on an obvious and simple fact of science? A crazy planet full of crazy people. Somersaulting all around the sky. And every time it turns another song.
Thank you.
all-absorbing character.
That fascinating creature. That superficial feature. Me.
So every star and every whirling planet and every constellation in the sky revolves around the center of the universe, a lovely thing called I. And there's no way to stop it, no, there's no way to stop it, and I know, though I cannot tell you why. Let's charm it. Just as long as I'm living, there'll be nothing else as wonderful as I. Nothing else is wonderful as I.
All right, gang, are we ready?
Oh, man, I don't know. You don't know
it's like,
the anthem.
It's like karaoke, okay?
Yeah, I don't know if you can catch me singing that song, but yeah, I'll get some lines out of me.
No,
I forget how the beat starts.
Well, let's do the lines first, since we clearly have to do lines anyway. So let's get it going.
I'm Franz, and who else am I?
You're also going to be the captain. I'm going to be Max Detweiler again.
I'm Franz and captain.
Yes, right. And then Allison, you will play the Baroness.
And who is Franz again in this story?
He's just like the butler.
He's just the butler.
Yeah.
And the captain is...
The captain. Yeah. Is the fucking captain. It's fucking Christopher Plummer in the original Sound of Music movie.
He should have been the captain.
All right, let's make this happen. Herr Detweiler, when you were gone, there was a call from you from Berlin.
Who could be calling me from Berlin?
They said you'd know who it was.
Oh, thank you, Franz. Georg, what would...
Max... This is not the first call you've had from Berlin.
Georg, you know I have no political convictions. Can I help it if other people have?
Oh, Max, don't start that up again. The Germans have promised not to invade Austria. Max knows that.
Then why does he bother the calls from Berlin?
Because if they don't keep their promise, I want to have some friends among them.
Naturally.
Oh, you agree too?
Georg, this is the way I look at it. There was a man who was dying. They were giving him the last rites, and they asked him... Do you renounce the devil and all his works? And he said, at this moment, I prefer not to make any enemies.
Georg, if they should invade us, would you defy them?
Yes.
Do you realize what might happen to you? To your property?
To your children.
To everyone close to you, to Elsa, and to me.
And what would you do if they come?
Huh, well, anyone with any sense would do. Just sit tight and wait for it all to blow over.
You do think it works.
One thing is for sure. Nothing you do, what you can do, will make any difference.
Oh, don't look so serious, darling. Take the world off your shoulders. Relax.
And then...
that last line. Most of what America thinks.
Do it. You do.
Dear attractive, do I idealist. Oh, today you have to learn to be a realist.
A realist.
A realist.
You do like seven zimmers a herring do. But up against the shark, what can a herring do?
Be wise.
No, there we go.
Be wise. Compromise.
Compromise and be wise.
Let them think they're on your side. Be noncommittal.
I will not bow my head to the men I despise.
You won't have to bow your head. Just stoop a little.
Why not learn to put your faith in your reliance on an obvious and simple fact of science?
One, two, three.
A crazy planet full of crazy people of something all around the sky, and every time it turns, another somersault, another day goes by.
Wait,
how do I go?
Wait, you're going a little fast. You're going fast. Another day
goes by. And there's no way to stop it. No, there's no way to stop it. You know, you can't stop it even if you tried. So I'm not going to worry. No, I'm not going to worry every time I see another day go by.
Beautiful. This track is amazing. Oh, I love this track.
Well, somersaulting at a cockeyed angle, we make a cockeyed circle around the sun. And when we circle back to where we started from, another year has run.
And there's no way to stop it. No, there's no way to stop it. Even the Earth wants to roll around the sun. Doo-doo-doo. You're a fool if you worry. You're a fool if you worry over anything but little number one.
That's you.
It's I.
And I.
And me! Oh, sorry. Aren't that all-absorbing character?
That's the special feature!
Me!
Me.
Me.
Too.
So every star on every whirling planet and every constellation in the sky revolves around the center of the universe. That lovely thing called...
And there's no way to stop it, and there's no way to stop it, and I know, though I cannot tell you why,
that's charming.
Just as long as I'm living, just as long as I'm living, there'll be nothing else as wonderful as I.
What?
I. Nothing else is wonderful as I.
Thus concludes another edition of Recreation Theater, brought to you by Lost and Rewound.
I can't believe it.
This is a song about, like, just, what do you call that when you just chill with Nazis?
You just let shit happen.
No, but there was a word for that.
What do you mean?
What, like
Coverting with the enemy?
No. There's like a word for like... The French did it, and it's just, what do you call it? There's a word.
You're the World War II buff.
I know, that's why the fact that I'm not getting it is bad.
I'm frankly very disappointed in you, James, because considering your like interest in all things Hitler, World War II, and
oh no, I want to redo the song. It wasn't good enough.
No, it was great. you held it.
Nailed my first line.
You made it work. I'm a terrible conductor.
You had a lot of lines in that thing, though. That was why.
I loved your captain's voice. It was
good.
Could you like talk a little bit in your captain's voice just so?
Oh, holy! Why are we getting on the calls from Berlin? Why are the calls,
dude? That's the way Christopher Plummer should have been talking.
Oh my god! I feel like I'm so close to finding out, because like the Vichy French were, it's with C.
Christopher Plummer took over for Kevin Spacey, right?
Oh yeah, that's why I was like looking up the movie last night, and I was trying to like wrap my head around the fact that Christopher Plummer just got nominated for a Golden Globe, and also was the guy who played opposite Julie Andrews in The Sound of Music. So like, this guy's been around for freaking ever.
Yeah,
I'm never gonna get this word.
Nope, it's okay. We'll figure it out. It'll be all right. But meantime, thank you all for indulging us on this rabble-rousing edition. This is what happens when we don't have guests booked. I come in and I throw a Hail Mary, and it usually ends up with me taking full control and direction of what happens. And we don't know what's going to happen. We never know what happens. Every week we do the show, there's always some unpredictable nature, whether we have a guest or when we not have a guest.
We just sang a song like, maybe the Nazis won't be that bad, so...
It's probably why I was taken out of the movie.
You know, I was hanging out with a Nazi the other day, and I just said to myself, maybe I'll just keep butting my lip up.
That's a song that's basically saying that, hey, totalitarianism, we'll figure it out. There's no way to stop it.
Let's ride this wave.
Kind of like what we're doing now. We're enjoying ourselves in spite of all the bullshit that goes on. Ignore it. Move on. Find happiness.
Expand your mind.
Exactly. Let the shit work itself out.
Ilan Guru.
Nah.
This is the words from the Ilan Guru.
This has been another edition of Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thanks to Daniela Sumerano for calling
awesome.
In. Hit us up on email for all of your questions. LostandRewound@RadioFreeBrooklyn.org. We are all over the web, iTunes, SoundCloud, and our main site, LostandRewound.podomatic.com. Mm-hmm. My name's Alon.
And I'm Jimmy.
I'm Allison.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Take care, Lost and Rewound.
Radio Free Brooklyn.
You're a catch, buddy. Don't sell yourself short. You could be sexually harassed, too. Maybe you show a little more skin. Do something with that hairline, you know?